The following podcast is brought to you by the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California.
Yeehaw! And welcome everyone to In the Saddle with your host, DJ Iceberg. Strap on your boots and mount up with me as we take a ride through the equine world. The training of dressage horses and the literature that explains it goes back to around 400 BC, when the Greek philosopher and military man Xenophon wrote of it. His books are called On Horsemanship and The Art of Horsemanship. A large part of the dressage world was created by the military, but the more wealthy population also showed an interest in the animals, going as far as to take them to pageants for horses. Do they wear tiaras? There's a skill in dressage called Spanish walking, where you see a horse essentially dancing, bringing up each knee to their chest. I believe that this and other Spanish riding movements are so apparent today because in 1572, the Imperial Spanish Riding School of Vienna was established, 30 years before the enclosure laws of England popularized riding. Before the 1900s, the main onset of the haute école movement in dressage were not related to the preparation for warfare, but were actually seen in the circus. At this point, they were called ring riders, and for the purpose of entertaining their spectators, the movements lost some of their foundation, paramount to dressage. I would like to quickly explain what haute école movements even are. The word haute and école literally translate to high school. The other definition, which was less literal, being the practice, technique, and the art of intricate movements of equestrianship and specifically of dressage. It evolved into something more beneficial to the sport when cross-country riders began using dressage to train their horses for competition in the 1900s. Riders realized that they needed better movement and strength over their horses' backs to create an athlete capable of precise dressage movements with jumping strength as well. As I discussed in episode 1, the forward seat was invented in the late 1800s by Federico Caprilli. He understood that horses needed to land on their forelegs, as it was originally thought that they should land on their hind legs. It was also important not to restrict the neck and head position of the horse. The downside of this new style of jumping created a need to grip the saddle with one's knees. After about an hour of riding a horse using those muscles, it could become very taxing, and one would definitely be sore the next day, especially if it were a new position that they had never tried before. But the downside also has an upside, as it brought the rider closer to the horse's center of gravity. I've already given you the rest of his history. What I did not discuss about him before was the way in which he passed. It is said that Caprilli died under mysterious circumstances in 1907 when his body was found on a cobblestone road in Pinerolo. It was thought that he had been attacked because a resentful or jealous superior, but there were no obvious signs that he had met his death in that way at the time. Anyways, enough of the dramaticism. It was concluded that his mount must have slipped on some ice, throwing him off, and that he had hit his head on the cobblestones. But with the lack of technology 115 years ago, if there was foul play, it likely would not have been found. I am curious, though, if his body was exhumed and examined today, with all of our advancements in modern technology, would there be signs of foul play? 2 world wars in less than 20 years greatly diminished the population of horses. By 1949, there were no horses left in Europe other than racehorses. Across the pond in the U.S., the cavalry butchered over 10,000 horses to feed their troops. There were little proper dressage horses left to train across the U.S. and Europe after this, which caused a loss of training knowledge. This lack of knowledge cannot be underestimated and reflects in our riding today. In the mid-1900s, many books about dressage discussed the high school or haute école movements in detail, with no instruction as to how the horse should be trained so it could perform the movements. That is a gigantic piece of information missing. The most important years for training horses are the same as it is for people, their youth. In the first year, a trainer needs to get their horse halter broken, which means that they let you put a halter on, which is basically a dog collar but for a horse, and walk them around. By the time they're 18 months old, you can start breaking them. But the age that you break them can depend on the horse's breed and its temperament. DeepHollowRanch.com has a 6-step guide for breaking horses, which I'm going to talk about now. Step 1, gain the horse's trust. Now, you can do this from the start of when you get a horse. So if you have a horse that is born on your property, then you should start gaining their trust the second they're born. And by the end of their first year, they should already trust you. But if that's not the case, like any other human relationship, it has to start with confidence. Your horse will only cooperate with your instructions when it feels safe and relaxed around you. Also, when breaking a horse, it might be a good choice to allow the animal to decide to approach you, since their instinctive reaction is to move away when you come towards them. Step 2, pressure and release. This step requires the definition of negative reinforcement, which is the encouragement of certain behaviors by removing or avoiding a negative outcome or stimuli. Besides using this technique on training horses, people typically use this to help children learn good patterns of behavior as well. Negative reinforcement is used by applying light pressure on the horse's body. You can also gently tap with a lunge whip, in which case your horse will try to avoid the pressure and move in the opposite direction of it. Timing in this step is everything, so the trainer needs to know when to keep the pressure on and when to release it. And at the moment the animal fulfills your goal, take away the whip completely and begin step 3, the rewarding process. After the negative reinforcement, the trainer should reward every improvement in the horse's behavior. Each time your horse learns something, you should offer a treat, followed by your command, because it will become more cooperative and obedient the more you repeat it. Besides treats, you can reward your horse with some extra time in the pasture, hanging out with other horses, grooming it, even having a conversation with it. I actually often would go into the barn and sing to my horses. And when I got cows, I would go and sing to them and it would visibly calm them down. In the reward phase, there is almost no such thing as too many treats as long as they are given those treats for good behavior, as well as the fact that there are other non-food treats that you can give them to reward them. Step 4 is desensitization. This is extremely important in riding, as a horse can weigh as much as 2,000 pounds. Having a horse desensitized to noise and touch or objects is vital for showing, because the audience can be loud and distracting. Not only that, but horses are scared of tarps, hoses, flags, and many other things. In fact, I was at an international riding competition years ago, and because the horse I was riding was not properly desensitized, he spooked by a row of flags by the Grand Prix arena and dumped me in the dirt. And I was lucky that I didn't get more hurt than just a few bruises. But some people aren't that lucky. So your best option is to confront the horse with the source of anxiety while providing it with a reward. As time goes by, the horse will learn not to fear or react to that object. And you can repeat this with any and all objects that they're scared of. Step 5, saddle training. Once you've taught your horse to get on its halter, walk, and lunge, you can start saddle breaking. First, you take off your jacket and place it on the horse's back. At this point, you will have spent hours with the animal, and since it recognizes your smell, it probably won't panic. After successfully placing the jacket on their back, you can take them for a walk with the jacket on. Once they are seemingly completely calm with this, you can replace it with a saddle pad. And after a saddle pad, you can replace it with a blanket, which is even heavier. All the while, you should be rewarding the horse's tolerance and lack of negative reactions to the object. Finally, you can put the saddle on the horse. Before you get on your horse, make sure it has already gotten used to walking, trotting, and lunging with its equipment on. Step 6, the first ride. Once you've successfully mounted it, ride the horse for no more than 10 minutes. This requires a lot of patience and a strong head just in case. Make sure to elongate the rides, making them a few minutes longer each time, but do not force the animal to do more than it's ready for, as that could set them back. Horses are very social creatures, so if you're having trouble training one, bring one of their friends in to help out. And always remember that breaking a horse is just the beginning of its training, and to continue watching their reactions, moods, and misbehaviors so that you can correct them as they come. Because of the massive loss of equestrians and horses during these wars, it was no longer common knowledge that the first 2 years of a horse's life are the most crucial for breaking and training. Not only that, but there is an idea that at the time, horses were a part of almost every household, and so they knew how to take care of them and train them. Now, the bulk of today's society does not have any experience with horses and would not know what the best time it is to feed them, and would definitely not know how to train them. Though I'm sure those of you who have watched Heartland think that you do know how to train horses. There are a handful of people that remained with the vast knowledge of equestrianship, but they chose to leave the sport as it became less of an art. Riders would find loopholes such as false framing, which gives the appearance of a nicely rounded neck of a horse to the untrained eye, but to these experts, it was akin to sacrilege. Germany and France are two of the countries that have had much of an influence on dressage today, but they didn't have it easy with their horses at first. The Germans had warm blood horses, with large barrels causing them to be rather clunky. I would like to clarify, there is no such thing as a cold blood horse. Warm blood is just a type of horse and not a reflection on the temperature of their blood, like snakes. Also, what is referred to as a barrel on a horse is their stomach. And honestly, now that I think about it, you could probably measure an actual barrel around and then come out to a similar measurement of a horse's barrel. That's probably why it was named that. Over the years, Germany bred these warm bloods with thoroughbreds, which are racehorses. Because of the crossbreeding of these horses, warm bloods became lighter and lighter and lighter and eventually turned into the highly popular Dutch warm blood that we see in dressage today. France used thoroughbreds, which were more suitable for the purposes of dressage at the time compared to Germany's warm bloods. But unlike their horses, the French thoroughbreds needed to be bred and trained to develop strength in their backs. This was another reason Germans were smart to combine these breeds, because the warm bloods had the strength and the muscle mass, and the thoroughbreds had the speed and the grace. After the war came the Industrial Revolution, replacing their one horsepower for a Ford Motor Company vehicle. Luckily, horses were not out of the picture completely. They were just reinvented into a sport horse. This is not what it sounds like, though. Being a sport horse does not actually mean that they do anything that is particularly sporty. The other names for them are leisure or pleasure horse, which is more fitting. And we'll talk more about pleasure horses in episode 3, as it pertains more to Western riding. Until next time, iceberg out.